Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Oh, New York Times, you're at least good for providing material to comment on where our society has gone wrong in recent years. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today I want to talk about a guest essay in the opinion section of the New York Times recently. This was published June 27th, 2021. Titled, The Bishops Are Wrong About Biden and Abortion. It's authored by Gary Willis. And he is a notorious dissenter. He's somebody who's been around the block for a while writing on Catholicism and promoting heterodox or, frankly, unorthodox teachings related to the Catholic faith. And it's always when you get somebody to critique the church. Whenever you're a mainstream publication, you got to get somebody to rip on the Catholic Church. You always got to go to someone who can say, I went to Catholic school my whole life. I went to Mass here, and I've been Catholic for 50 years, and here's what's wrong with the Catholic Church. Well, stop identifying as a Catholic. You're Catholic in virtue of your baptism. But this came up when I talked about the slippery tactics of pro-choice politicians. These are the people who will brag about being Catholic and then say the church is wrong on all these moral teachings. Well, dude, why would I belong to a religion that teaches fundamentally, I believe it teaches fundamentally false things about morality, about the human person? I'd be out the door. And yet they still want to be involved because for now, the term Catholic still has a positive connotation of a certain kind of Catholic. Namely, being the person who goes to Mass, the person who engages in inoffensive corporal works of mercy, like feeding the poor, which of course we should do. And the people I know who care about the church's teachings on life, on sexual morality, they also care about the church's teachings on the corporal works of mercy, because they're whole, holy and consistent people. But in our culture, you can be a great Catholic if you just do inoffensive corporal works of mercy that everybody in the culture agrees with. And you go to Mass, and that's it. You can still be a respectable individual in our society. But as soon as you affirm any teaching of the church that our culture as a majority stands against, well, then suddenly you're not respectable anymore. So to rip on those people, if you're an unrespectable Catholic who holds to troglodyte views related to marriage or life or sexuality, they have to bring in a respectable Catholic, like Gary Willis, to set you all straight. And what's amazing here is to try to say, oh, the gaslighting. That's amazing here. Try to say, well, the church isn't really against abortion. There are some more tactics here. Pro-choice politicians usually don't dive into this. It's more theological excess from commenters and things like that. But I do want to jump into it today here on the podcast. But before I do that, I want to give a big thanks to our supporters at TrenthornPodcast.com. You guys are making the podcast possible. We're able to upgrade and expand our video elements at the Council of Trent to reach a lot more people, to equip and edify them. I got a nice little new camera that made the picture quality ever so nicer. And I got a DSLR camera on the way to really improve that. We couldn't do that without our supporters at TrenthornPodcast.com. If you head out there and become a supporter, you can get our video catechism study series, does the whole catechism, or our New Testament study series, covers the entire New Testament in a video lecture series. Check that out at TrentHornPodcast.com. And without further ado, here is my response to Gary Will's essay in the New York Times, The Bishops Are Wrong About Biden and Abortion. He begins, what is the worst crime a society can commit? Some people, I among them, would say the Holocaust, the cold, methodical murder of 6 million people just for being Jews. Also Roma, Polish, people who wouldn't go along with the program, including Catholics. But some Catholics and evangelicals say they know of an even greater crime, the deliberate killing of untold millions of unborn babies by abortion. They have determined that a fetus is a person and abortion is therefore murder. This is a crime of such magnitude that some Catholic bishops are trying to deny the reception of Holy Communion by the President of the United States for not working to prevent it. Well, it's not just that, he's working to uphold it. He reversed the Mexico City policy, which funds abortion providers overseas. If Roe versus Wade were overturned, Biden would no doubt sign a federal law to keep abortion legal at the federal level to overcome the fact that it's gone back to the states. So he's enabling, supporting, and upholding legal abortion. the killing of small children. So what are the reasons that Wills gives to say abortion's not that big a deal for a Catholic? No one told Dante that this was the worst crime, Dante Alighieri being the author of the Divine Comedy from the Renaissance, late Middle Ages, or he would have put abortionists, not Judas, in the deepest frozen depths of his inferno. But in fact, he does not put abortionists anywhere in the eight fiery tiers above the deepest one of his hell. Well, we get our moral theology from reason, from revelation, not from Dante's Divine Comedy. If we did, we would have to say that betraying someone is more evil than murder, because Dante places murderers above betrayers, above traitors in the Divine Comedy. I think actually even worse than murderers are thieves, but I'll have to, I haven't read the Divine Comedy in a while. But the fact of the matter is, that's not where we go for our moral theology. This is not a singular omission. No one told Matthew, Mark, or Luke, or John, or Paul, or any other New Testament author that he should condemn this sin of all sins. Now, of course, I wouldn't even say that abortion is the worst sin, right? The worst sin, what is the worst sin? The worst sin is the unforgivable sin, right? There are, the Holy Spirit can forgive, God can forgive any sin, but Jesus says there is the unforgivable sin. And what is that? Well, the church has traditionally held the unforgivable sin is the sin of final obstinacy, of refusing to ask for forgiveness until death. Okay, so the worst crime that you could commit is not against another person, it's against God by rejecting God for all eternity. So just because abortion is not the worst sin, it doesn't follow it's not extremely grave. Rape is not the worst sin. But if a politician were defending rape, he should not present himself for abortion. The fact of the matter is, this is very severe. Also, you'll notice that Wills puts Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in quotation marks. That's because it seemed he probably doubts that they actually even wrote those gospels. That's why he did that, probably. Nor did any author of the Old Testament raise this alarm, with the result that we do not have Moses or Jesus on record as opposing abortion. The Old and New Testament also don't on record condemn the sexual abuse of one's own children. That should just go without saying. You don't treat your children that way, just like it would go without saying you don't dismember your own children. And also the reason for that is the most popular way to end a unwanted child's life in the ancient world was not abortion, it was infanticide. The reason that abortion is so much more common in the 20th and 21st centuries is because surgery is more common. People are more willing to engage in surgeries because we have antibiotics and antiseptics and things to make surgery safe. Prior to that, it would have been really dangerous to try to do abortions. Instead, you would just give birth because you wouldn't realize you're pregnant until far later in the pregnancy than now. And then you would just give birth and then smother the child or expose them in the wilderness. Nor did any of the major definitive creeds. Well, so what? The creeds also don't condemn other moral atrocities. The creeds don't say murder is wrong, rape is wrong, genocide is wrong. The creeds are articulations of theological truths about our faith. They don't talk about moral issues or even other important theological issues. Like, you don't have affirmations of hell being eternal separation from God, or a lot of talk about hell in general in the creeds, because the creeds just talk about the major articles of faith, not moral teachings. And you don't need that. You have the constant tradition of the church that upholds abortion to be a severe moral crime. So Wills goes on to say, even major figures of religious history do not tell us that the fetus is a person. St. Augustine says he searched scripture, trying but failing to find out when in the procreative process personal life begins. But St. Thomas Aquinas knew. Aristotle told him that it came at or near childbirth, after an earlier stage of having a nutritive soul like plant life, which developed into an animal soul, at last receiving a rational soul. No, Aquinas did not think you got your rational soul like the minute before you were born. I believe Aquinas puts it at 40 to 80 days after conception, which would be when you have a person, which at that time would have been before people knew they were pregnant, especially with things like realizing the child is there, like quickening. So even with that, say, what if we said to Wills, okay, 40 to 80 days, that would mean, you know, hedge bets here, no abortions after 8 weeks. That's what Aquinas and Aristotle thought. Wills said, oh, well, they don't know what they were talking about. So, you know, why would you even bring it up? Yeah, they had a mistaken view of biology from Aristotle, and they thought that you needed a rational body to get a rational soul. But we know from genetics, people have a rational body from the moment they're conceived because they're a whole human organism. So if the doctors of the church had the scientific knowledge we have today, they would have affirmed this is a human organism, a human being. But the doctors of the church, the fathers, all universally declared abortion is evil. They might have said, hey, maybe it's contraception at this point, maybe it's the killing of a human being at another, but it is always wrong to do this. No one ever affirmed it. It was universally condemned. And so this doesn't help Will's point at all. In fact, that we just get more science now to confirm this universal condemnation that has existed in 2,000 years of the church's history. In 1930, Pope Pius XI, in his encyclical Casti Canubi, forbade all ways to prevent procreation, lumping them together with the condemnation of Onan, who prevents his widowed sister-in-law from childbirth by coitus interruptus. Now, Pius XI did not condemn all ways of preventing procreation, because you could practice abstinence and never procreate by joining the religious life, for example. You'll never procreate. Maybe what he means is, well, preventing procreation in marriage. That's not true. Pius XI never condemned periodic abstinence, for example, to be able to regulate in space births. That's brought out more clearly in Humanae Vitae under Pope Paul VI. But yeah, it is connected to the sin of Onan in Genesis 38, verses 9 through 10. It says that Onan spilled his seed on the ground. God didn't like it, struck him down. And now he'll say, well, scholars say it's just because he didn't fulfill the Levirate marriage law. He refused to, because he married his dead brother's wife, the children would have his brother's name. So they're saying God struck him down for refusing to carry out his Levirate or brotherly duties to carry on children in his dead brother's name. If that were the case, the problem is later on in the Old Testament, the penalty for refusal to produce children for your deceased brother through his surviving wife was public shaming. It was not death. So clearly there's something specific about what Onan did that made God so upset. And it was spilling his seed. It was perverting the sacredness of the marital act that had been given. And so he goes on, he talks about something from Dorothy Parker, which more about Onan, which, okay, whatever. Let's see here. The religious opponents of abortion think that the human person actually antedates the Aristotelian scheme, dating it from conception when the semen fertilizes the ovum. It's not just us. That's every embryology textbook in the world says you have a human organism at conception. Check out my video, Proof Human Life Begins at Conception. But the Catholic theologian Bernard Haring, points out that at least half of the fertilized eggs fail to achieve nidation, adherence to the uterus, which we would call implantation. Haring was a very heterodox theologian in the middle of the 20th century. Pope Paul VI asked Haring to be on the birth control commission before he released Humanae Vitae. And the reason was he wanted to test his arguments against someone like Haring, who was basically on the dissenting path, who had very heterodox views. It said in the invitation, your views are well known. Haring was very infamous. But this argument that, it says here, making nature and nature's God guilty of a greater holocaust of unborn babies than abortion if the fertilized ovum is a baby. This argument doesn't make sense. We're saying, okay, the fetus is not a person because they have, the embryo is not a person, let's say, because miscarriages rarely happen after the first trimester. So we're saying that the embryo is not a person because it has a high mortality rate. That argument doesn't work. All human beings have a 100% mortality rate. We all eventually die. It doesn't mean that we're not persons. In fact, throughout history and in some parts of the world today, only a third of children will reach the age of 5, like in rural Afghanistan. And throughout human history, child mortality was at 50%. Half of all children didn't make it past their 5th birthday. Did that mean that children under 5 were not persons? No, it just meant life was hazardous for them. So it doesn't mean that we should cause more hazards by directly killing them. The opponents of abortion who call themselves pro-life make any form of human life, even pre-implantation eggs. These are embryos, not eggs. That doesn't make sense. They're embryos. They're small organisms, sacred. My clipped fingernails or trimmed hairs are human life. They are not canine hair. Well, of course, they have human DNA, but they're not an organism because they are not developing. You can give them environment, the right nutrition, time. They'll always be body parts. They're not like an embryo because embryo and fetus, the definition is a human organism at a certain stage of development. So to say it's okay to kill them because of their stage of development is a bigoted form of discrimination called ageism. Say, well, they're little, so we can kill them. That's awful. This cult, which began as far back as the 1950s, led to debate over whether, in a pregnancy crisis, the life of the fetus should be preferred to that of the mother. In her brilliant book, Policing the Womb, Michelle Goodwin, well, of course, by the way, if the fetus is not a person, who cares? Do abortion for any reason. If a mother's life is in danger, do abortion. Nobody cares. If the unborn child is a person, you have a medical dilemma. You have two people in danger. You might only be able to save one. It'd be like if you went to the scene of a car accident and someone's dying and there's a baby trapped in the wreckage. Do you cut through the dying parent passenger to save the baby? Let's say you have a dying parent in a crumpled vehicle and you can't extract them from the wreckage, but you could cut through them morbidly to get the baby in the back seat. Do you do that? It's a dilemma. But the fact that we have dilemmas where we're not sure what to do with two lives hanging in the balance doesn't mean it would be okay for that parent to kill their baby in some other circumstance or just to kill human beings for any reason whatsoever. The presence of hard cases does not nullify the clear cases where killing is wrong, which in the case of abortion is just the direct killing of an innocent human being simply because they're unwanted. In her brilliant book, Michelle Goodwin records how state legislatures are now inventing a new crime, feticide. Does a pregnant woman smoking or drinking endanger the fetus in her? Haul her into court and convict her of attempted feticide. Bring doctors in to testify against her. We sort of already have that in 35 states and under federal law. If you kill a wanted fetus, if a boyfriend stabs his pregnant girlfriend and the child dies, he can be brought up on charges of homicide. But if the mother does it and has an abortion, it's fine. That's inconsistent. So we already have feticide laws for men. Then to treat women equally with men, we should have feticide laws for women as well. Every feminist should be in favor of feticide laws for women because we already have these laws for men. If a man kills a wanted fetus, he can be punished for homicide, for illegal homicide. But women are not. These laws, they infantilize women. They treat women as if they are not competent moral agents who can be held accountable. That doesn't mean that feticide means you're going to get the death penalty or life in prison without parole or something like that. There are other countries that have infanticide laws that recognize infanticide is a different crime from other murders. Usually the mother is distressed. The mother's not a threat to anyone else in the community. It's still a crime and it's punished proportionately. But my point is, if we punish men for killing wanted fetuses, why wouldn't women be held accountable for killing unwanted fetuses? It should be equal. Then he goes through talking about growing up as a Catholic and about what was done with miscarriages. My Catholic grandmother, Rose Collins, had 3 or 4 miscarriages, but told me she didn't worry about how the discharges were disposed of. She had 4 living children to care for. Well, we have endured miscarriage. It's painful. And we are grateful for those priests who have prayed for us and for people who have substantive miscarriages. There are Catholic cemeteries who do offer burial services. I think he goes up, the church didn't recommend baptizing a miscarriage as if it were a full human being, nor giving it last rites. The reason for that is you cannot baptize the dead. If someone has died, the only people who can receive sacraments are the living, not the dead. You can pray for that person, but if someone is dead, no sacraments will help them. So that doesn't show the unborn are not persons. Finally, he says the Catholic Church no longer claims opposition to abortion is scriptural. It is not a religious issue. Well, it is. Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life from Pope St. John Paul II, does say that the Bible condemns murder and it affirms the goodness of human life. You don't need a direct proof text. The Bible says, Proverbs 6:16, God hates hands that shed innocent blood. Reason tells us the unborn is a human being. And I would say scripture gives us evidence of this. Look in the New Testament when John the Baptist leapt in his mother's womb. It talks about him being a brephos in Greek, a baby. The unborn are not classed as being non-humans. Now, in the Old Testament, they're not part of a census that has taken place, but children under the age of 1 month are not considered part of the census because their lives are fragile. They might be born, they could die very quickly after birth. They're not included in the census, doesn't mean they're not human beings. Yet, as the Catholic judge John T. Noonan said, Noonan was the guy who tried to get the church's teaching on contraception changed. Most recognized experts on natural law in universities, human rights organizations, medical and psychological bodies do not generally oppose abortion. So what? Most of the medical doctors in Germany didn't oppose the Holocaust, I bet. But they're biased. The point is the arguments, not what the... Because, and I would say this argument, by the way, folds in on itself because 150 years ago, the American Medical Association did condemn abortion. It said that abortionists were modern-day Herods, like King Herod, who slaughtered the children at Bethlehem. So were they right then or wrong then? And now they're right now. We don't get to moral truths by a head count. Okay, we look at the arguments. Nor, according to polls, do a majority of American citizens, even Catholic citizens. Some women of my own extended family have had abortions and still consider themselves Catholics. President Biden seems to be on their side, as is Pope Francis. What? I get that you could say there's a lot of people who call themselves Catholic and support abortion. Don't try to bring Pope Francis into this. Pope Francis has said he has compared having an abortion to hiring a hitman. But what's amazing is the media doesn't want to get all worked up about that because the media loves Pope Francis until he says things that disappoint them. So that's always appreciative. I mean, Pope Francis will say bold and impromptu things that are sometimes not very helpful. But like when it comes to abortion, like I couldn't imagine Benedict saying something as blunt like this. But for him to say, yeah, abortion's like hiring a hitman. You don't do that to solve your problems. Good on Pope Francis for saying that. So to lump him in here, it says they hate this Pope and this president anyway. Says the American bishops hate this Pope and this president. Oh, Wills, you're become very curmudgeonly in your as you've progressed this point in your career. Anyways, that was Will's take on the bishops, Biden, abortion, more typical pro-choice Catholic arguments that you need to be aware of to be able to counter. Finally, I'll leave you with some of the letters to the editor that were printed after this article. I love what the New York Times selects here. It's a great wide array. Here's one. The church's single-minded attention to abortion is hypocritical. The church tunes out life and death issues like gun use, drug and alcohol abuse, sexual abuse, and mental health, which is funny because there are many Catholics who would say that the USCCB focuses too much on poverty, gun violence, abuse, and not enough on abortion. So it's like they can't win. Let me scroll down to my, get out of the business of politics, American bishops, get back into the teachings of Jesus. The people who say this also say that the bishops should support universal health care. The bishops should oppose systemic racism. So when they say get out of the business of politics, they mean don't try to defend marriage or the unborn in a way that will infringe on my autonomy. That's what they mean. They want the bishops to do politics, to do respectable Catholic politics, not unrespectable Catholic politics, like defending marriage or the unborn. Here's the other one. Can a man write the definitive article on abortion and faith? Well, no one person can, but Gary Wills has come as close as humanly possible, especially for a brilliant, wise, learned guy. What if it says from Emily Hardington, San Jose, New Mexico? I wish it was what a brilliant, wonderful guy. I love this Gary Wills letter sent to us by Wary Gills, something like that, or Bertha Wills, Gary's mother. I don't know. Oh my goodness. Well, hey, this is helpful at least for you to recognize these arguments and be able to engage them and refute them for the cause of life. Thank you guys so much. If you come across, by the way, other articles, YouTube videos, things you want me to address, reach out to me on social media. Leave a comment below if you say, hey, here's an article or video I'd love for you to address. Probably one of the best ways to get a rebuttal video idea to me is to become a patron at trendhornpodcast.com. You can directly message me there and send me your ideas. Thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.